Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. So today is the day before Thanksgiving, and later on in the program, Mara Taub will be joining us for a few minutes, and talking about Amigos del Parque, and Stacy Pearl will be here talking about the zenith of the culinary year, known as Thanksgiving dinner. Right now, we're going to continue on in our annual Thanksgiving tradition and listen to Arlo Guthrie's song, Alice's Restaurant. This song was recorded in 1967, and all the events that you will hear about in this song really happened, and all the people are real people. Probably a little bit of artistic license here and there, but basically this is a true story. Arlo Guthrie is the son of the late great folk singer and composer Woody Guthrie, and he is still a working musician living in Massachusetts. Hear now the song, Alice's Restaurant.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road. And off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile's better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So he got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. He said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car, and that's what we did. Sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened. Here they got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obie, I can understand you wanting my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for? And it said, kid, we don't want any hangings. I said, Obie, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering? Obie said he was making sure, and friends, Obie was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie came in with the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures, and the judge walked in, sat down with the C&I dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the C&I dog. And then the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the C&I dog. And then at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, because Obie came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the, I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. And I want to kill. Kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. 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 And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill. Kill. And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill. Kill. And the sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, you're our boy. Feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I went, finally came to see the very last man. I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped right there and said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. It stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid! And I walked over to the bench there, and there's his Group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There's mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? Said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage. I said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry eyeball and all kinds of mean, nasty things. Till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things, until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and else kind of thing. You got to say, pretend to about the crime. Want to know the rest of the officer's name, and else kind of thing. You got to say, and talk for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the Massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words. Kid, you rehabilitated yourself. I went over to the sergeant and said, Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on a Group W bench. Because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug. He looked at me and said, Kid, we don't like your kind. And we're gonna send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation, and if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, shrink. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is. The Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
That was horrible.
Want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again, and this time with four-part harmony and feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. All right now. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Accepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Say, walk right in, it's around the back, and just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's restaurant.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Alice's Restaurant by the inimitable Arlo Guthrie, once again from 1967. I'd like now to introduce Mara Taub. She is co-founder of Los Amigos del Parque. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's always wonderful to be here.
Now, it's that time of year again. Mara has shown up, so that means that something is happening around Christmas time.
Yes, we are very involved in planning our Posadas Navideñas, which is the holiday party that we put on to benefit the immigrant laborers who wait in the park downtown near the Hilton Hotel and the Virgin of Guadalupe for jobs, which are getting scarcer and scarcer.
I would think so.
And so we have been very busy trying to arrange for the food and the decorations and the entertainment and, above all, the bags of winter clothing that are so essential to get through the winter with in Santa Fe. We've done pretty well. We're hoping that perhaps some of the listeners here would like to contribute toward the last of the winter coats that we need and warm socks.
So this is something that people, if they want to clean out their closets and drawers, can contribute. How do they do that?
They should call me, Mara Taub, at 982-9520.
982-9520.
That's right. And we will arrange pickup.
So what happens at Las Posadas Navideñas?
Well, I need to start, I think, with what happens with Los Amigos del Parque, which is an organization, a binational hospitality and advocacy organization that we started in June of 2001 to try to welcome and acknowledge the contribution to the community of the day laborers who wait, as I said, downtown for work every day. We have always thought of this project as a two-way street. On the one hand, to welcome the newcomers to our community, and on the other hand, to inform ourselves about the realities of their lives, and all around to join our community into one real whole instead of all of the separate Santa Fes that we are still burdened with.
All the separate Santa Fes. Meaning the sort of class stratification that we have in this not very large city?
We don't really know all of each other as well as we would benefit from. And we want to remedy that situation.
We're talking to Mara Taub. So, Las Posadas Navideñas.
Las Posadas Navideñas is a traditional festivity celebrated especially in Mexico, among many other places. But since many of the men that we have come to know in the park are, in fact, from Mexico and, in fact, from the state of Chihuahua, we want to provide something familiar and friendly and comfortable for people who are going to be away from home for the holidays. It is the one time of year when we meet inside in a warm, light place where we sit down and have a traditional cooked meal together. Enjoy the decorations, the entertainment, the music, and also where the men know that they will receive some assistance in warding off the cold New Mexico winter.
So all of this is happening pretty soon.
It is happening on Monday, December 8th, and I need to add in a new element this year because as we have gone along and been able to add more days of the week to our schedule and more different organizations as participants in our program, this year, Teatro Paraguas, which is a bilingual drama group which performs at El Museo Cultural, offered to do a benefit performance for us.
Oh, great.
And that benefit performance is going to be Saturday, December 6th. I don't know if I can say the prices of the tickets here on the air, but it's moderately priced, a wonderful value, and a traditional play, Las Apariciones de Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe.
Is the actual Señora de Guadalupe going to appear live and in person?
The spirit of Guadalupe will definitely be there, without question.
Mara Taub is co-founder of Los Amigos del Parque, and the if you want more information about Las Apariciones de Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe, you can call Teatro Paraguas for information and reservations at 473-0401. I'm dyslexic. 473-0143.
That's right. Or if you want to contribute to Las Posadas Navideñas, you can call me, Mara Taub.
Coats and socks, especially welcome.
At 982-9520.
Mara, thanks so much for being with us.
It's been wonderful, as usual.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like to welcome now Stacy Pearl. She is the executive chef at Walter Burke Catering. She is host and producer of Mouth of Wonder, a show which airs here on KSFR on Saturday mornings at 10:30. She is psychic to the stars?
No. Absolutely.
Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
It's great to have you again. And as always, our annual Thanksgiving dinner show.
Yes, I know. You know, this is like our, 15th, 16th year doing this.
That's right. We've been doing it since I was
five.
Since
we were kids. I know.
So let's talk turkey, as we say. First of all, people are asking all sorts of very important questions like, do I need to buy an organic turkey? And there's health reasons and there's taste reasons for that question.
Absolutely. The thing about turkey is any turkey can be made to taste good and any turkey can be ruined. Just because you buy a very expensive organic bird does not guarantee it's going to be delicious, though it can be. I think if you want to buy an organic bird, that's a wonderful thing. If you want to buy it fresh, that's great. But if you can't afford to do that, the birds you get in the supermarket are going to be just as lovely. The important thing is defrosting it properly, which takes a number of days in your refrigerator, and cooking it, not overcooking it, and serving it beautifully on a nice platter with lots of nice sides. So even if you ruin your turkey, which I don't think you're going to do, you could save the meal with a lot of good sides.
So, but okay, you can ruin anything. I mean, you can put the best piece of meat ever in the oven on high for 4 hours, and it's a piece of crisp.
Absolutely.
But in other words, if you cook both an organic and, what's the alternative, an inorganic turkey?
An inorganic bird, yes.
Beautifully the same way, does one of them actually taste better?
It's possible, but I wouldn't guarantee it. The thing is that The main thing about cooking turkey, the reason that everybody makes a face when they go, oh, I have to have turkey, is that most people overcook it. That's the most important thing to remember. There's not a lot of fat in turkey. So if you cook it an extra 30 minutes just to be safe, to make sure it doesn't, it's going to be sawdust.
Right.
So I have had some absolutely magnificent turkeys. My mother always swears by butterball turkey, which, by the way, has nothing to do with any injections of butter. People have this illusion that they infuse butter into it.
That sounds good.
They name it Butterball because it's big, fat, and round.
And like a ball of butter.
Yeah, I don't know what... I went on the Butterball website to find out what's actually a Butterball. It's just a big, fat turkey.
So let's go from the beginning of turkey cooking, because this is very important. We do not want a heap of sawdust. We want a nice, moist, juicy turkey when it comes out of the oven. People have been asking you the question, do they need to brine their turkey? What does that even mean?
Brining is a process where you make a salted water solution with some other herbs, and you let the turkey soak in it for 24 hours. It soaks into
A bucket?
In a bucket, exactly. Not in an aluminum bucket, in a non-reactive bucket. You could use a plastic bucket lined with a garbage bag. And you put the turkey and you let it soak, and all that moisture soaks into the turkey and guarantees you, supposedly, a moister bird. Now, frankly, if you don't overcook your bird, that's not even necessary. But if it makes you feel better, for instance, a classic brining solution would be a cup of kosher salt, half a cup of brown sugar, 5 bay leaves, 2 tablespoons peppercorns, garlic, rosemary, sage, a tablespoon each, and you put that in 2 quarts of boiling water, then you cool it, and then you put the turkey in it, and you let it sit overnight in a cool place.
Well, that's just marinade.
It is. But because of the salt, it tends to get into the fiber, and it will make your turkey moist. Frankly, my turkey is always moist. I don't do that. Don't feel like, oh my gosh, I didn't do it, it's too late. Don't worry about it. If you cook your turkey properly, the other really thing that's important about cooking turkey and keeping it moist is basting it. I always cook my turkey with some water at the bottom, so the pan drippings fall into the water that's in the bottom, and I have salt and pepper and garlic, paprika, and I take my baster. The cheapest baster you could buy, the plastic one in the supermarket, is the best one. And every 30 minutes, I baste the liquid from the top, from the bottom onto the top. It gives it a beautiful flavor, a beautiful color.
Do you have to keep adding water during the...
If your oven doesn't seal, if the door doesn't close real tight on your oven, a lot of times the water will evaporate out. Yeah, you should always make sure you have about a half an inch of water at the bottom, and that's the base of your gravy. And I find, you know, I don't brine, I baste. So that's sort of my solution.
So how do you know for how long to cook a turkey?
Well, there's the rule of thumb, which is that you cook a turkey 12 to 14 minutes per pound, which is close to right. The problem is we're at a high altitude. Things take different amount of time. If you stuff your bird, it has to cook a way, way longer time because till the heat gets through the center. I personally don't prefer to stuff my bird before I cook it. I think it means the bird has to be in the oven for too long before it gets fully cooked. So I just, if I do stuffing, I make it on the side, and I add the pan drippings to it, and it tastes just like it was in the bird.
Oh, that's the trick, because, of course, when you cook it inside the bird, it tastes really good because
right.
of all the turkey juice.
Right. So if you're looking for that, and you like the little crusty bits, so you put the stuffing in a roasting pan, you take the pan drippings, you put them on top, and then you put it in the oven under the broiler for like 5 minutes, you have tons of crusty bits. Which is everybody's favorite part.
Crusty bits are good.
Yeah.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl from Walter Burke Catering. So the number of minutes per pound really does vary quite a bit. It also varies depending on the size of the turkey. I have actually found that it is quite useful to go on the internet and look it up. You just
yes.
Google the word something like turkey minutes per pound.
Absolutely. There's some wonderful websites, and there's some good information. There's also some contradictory information. Like
on the internet?
Can you imagine? It used to be that the USDA said that turkey was done at 180 degrees internal temperature. They've now reduced that to 165.
165. So if you have your meat thermometer in there...
Which is the most important tool in making a turkey, you should use a meat thermometer. That's the best way to be sure you do not overcook your turkey.
Do not leave your meat thermometer in the turkey.
No. These are instant read. There are kinds you can leave in, but the ones that everyone uses now are called instant read. You put them in for about a minute, and you take them out. And what you want to do when measuring the heat of a turkey is you want to take the temperature in a variety of places. You want to take it where the leg meets the breast. You want to take it in the thickest part of the breast. You want to take it under the leg because different parts are denser than other parts, and get a consensus of temperature. And remember, too, that when you take a turkey out of the oven, it continues to cook. So a lot of times I will take my turkeys out at 160 and then check them, and they will always go up to 165. And then I know them done. You know, don't leave it in the oven till 165, and then you'll see it'll keep cooking.
What temperature do you cook a turkey at? Sometimes some of the recipes say that you should put it in at a higher temperature and then turn it down.
Yeah, there's a variety of thought on that. I personally cook my turkeys at 350.
Preheat the
oven. I use a convection oven, which is runs a little bit hotter and makes everything cook a little bit faster. If you have a home oven, a regular oven, I would say you could start your turkey at 375 for the first 20 minutes. Leave it uncovered. The skin should get a nice color. And then what I do is I tent it with tin foil and I turn the oven down. If you put the tent on the turkey when it's raw, the skin will stick to the tent. And then when you take the tin foil off, you could rip off the skin.
So you're putting an aluminum foil tent into a hot oven which is filled with racks.
You take the turkey out carefully, bring it over to your counter, make the tent. Yes.
While having the oven closed so it doesn't totally lose heat.
Yes, exactly. And then put it back. Now,
doesn't touch the turkey.
No. It just seals the juices in quite nicely. And then I take it off and I baste. You know,
while it's out.
A lot of people are serious about the tent. I have mixed feelings. It depends on your oven, quite honestly. If you open your oven door and a huge burst of steam comes out, that means it's holding all its moisture. You don't need to tent your turkey.
That's good.
Yeah. Now, my friend Andrew says...
You don't have to actually measure the humidity either. You just do it by feel.
If your glasses fog up when you open the oven door, you have a good seal on your oven.
Excellent.
Andrew cooks his turkey upside down. A lot of people say if you cook it with the breast side down, the juices run towards the breast. And it's certainly easy enough to do that. It's worth a try. We've done it a few times. It comes out great. You could do it like that for a while, then flip it over. Once again, you have to move a large, heavy bird. So it depends how much handling of the bird you want to do.
Now, for those who did brining with bay leaves and all sorts of delicious things in their briny sort of non-marinade thing, then there's all sorts of flavors that are already in the turkey.
Absolutely.
For those of us who are not brining, what do you put on the turkey and in the turkey to give it flavor?
Well, you could go from the most simple to the most complex. The most simple, you could brush it with olive oil, salt, and pepper. You could brush it with goose fat, salt, and pepper. You could put bacon on it if you wanted to.
I've done that many times.
I personally make it the way my mother made it, and she makes a paste mixture of salt, pepper, garlic powder, and paprika with a little bit of water and a little bit of oil, and I brush that on. And it gives the turkey a gorgeous color and a wonderful flavor.
Do you have to reapply anything? I mean, you're basting,
no.
But once you...
No, because what happens is those juices run down into the bottom where you have some water, mixes with the water, and then as you're basting it, you're continuing to put it over the top, and it glazes it each time.
Do you put... Say you do it the way you do it, and you don't actually stuff the turkey, so there's this whole cavity in there. Can you put anything in there that will flavor the turkey?
You could. I don't honestly think it's necessary. You could certainly put some fresh herbs. You could chop up an onion. And any of those aromatic herbs, parsley, thyme, rosemary, those things will all, I mean, it's certainly going to enhance the flavor. You know, for me, a lot of those flavors are what I ultimately put into the stuffing that's going to be eaten with it. So I don't really find that's necessary. But, you know, anything you add to the turkey is going to enhance it.
What do you do with the giblets? Do you put them in your stuffing?
Seldom. Because that's like an old school thing. Very few people eat that anymore.
I do.
I kind of like it myself. And we all, in my kitchen, we all fight over the liver, quite honestly. I'm a big fan of the liver. But if you want to, I tend to take that and I will put that into a stock pot with water and use that as the base of my turkey stock that I will use to make my gravy.
And so what happens to the actual organs themselves? You just give it to the dog?
Pretty much, yes. Except for the liver.
Well, what do you do with the liver? You saute it.
Salt, pepper, a little onion, a piece of rye bread. It's delicious.
Are you from New York?
Could be.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl about Thanksgiving turkey. So what else do we need to know? What do we need to know about Thanksgiving turkey besides what we've already said?
You need to know that you don't need to get up in the middle of the night to start cooking it.
That is so true.
I was on the internet and I was looking at some formula, and according to them, you had to cook a 20-pound turkey 6.5 hours. This is not true. I've never started my turkey. I eat my turkey at 6 o'clock. And I never start my turkey.
You eat it at 6 in the evening because you're a chef and
because
you're working all day.
I work, yes.
But some of us like to eat at 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Even so, if you put your turkey in at 8 and you had a huge turkey, you'd still be fine.
Yeah.
You can cook your turkey ahead of time. You don't need, the great thing about the Thanksgiving meal is almost everything can be done ahead of time without any damage to the quality of the food.
How can you cook a turkey ahead of time?
You could cook a turkey ahead of time, and then you can chill it down, and then you could either, if you're going to serve it sliced, which a lot of people do, if you cook it ahead of time, it's to your advantage. Then you let it cool, you slice it off the bone, lay it in a beautiful pan, cover it with gravy, cover it with some tinfoil, and then 20 minutes before serving time, you put it in the oven, and it warms in the gravy, and then it's all carved and ready to go.
Oh, that's interesting. People do that the day before?
People will cook their turkey the day before and then warm it in the gravy, and it's absolutely delicious.
You know what I like about Thanksgiving is you walk down the little street on which I live or on which anybody lives, and the whole entire street smells like turkey.
I love that. I love that. It is. It's a very aromatic between the pumpkin pie and the stuffing, and I love the smell. I'm a real big fan of bay leaves, which I always put in my stock, the smell of that. And it's also one of those great holidays where there's no religious conflict. It's a holiday of friends and family.
It's gratitude. It's giving thanks. It's no presents or commercial
exactly.
Nonsense.
It's just a wonderful reason to be with the people you like.
That's so true. And there are some historical, maybe little complications to all of that, which don't even think about that.
Because the whole pilgrim thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so there I'm having a bunch of people over, three of whom do not eat meat. So I think that rather than just having a turkey dinner that they can't eat and then green beans and apple pie, we really have to think of a main dish, couple of main dishes that are really delicious and have the Thanksgiving spirit.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, saying the vegetarians, well, you could just eat the side dishes.
Well, that's
kind of an insult.
It is an insult.
There's
mashed potatoes.
Because it's wintertime, fall, we have all the wonderful root vegetables. I mean, you could make, one of the things I like to do is make a black bean sort of casserole and stuff it in half a butternut squash, which is a really beautiful entree. Or you could do a really nice polenta dish. Or you have, beets and turnips and parsnips, all those wonderful root vegetables. You could do like a root vegetable curry. I think you should definitely make an attempt to make an actual entree for your vegetarians. If they eat cheese, of course, it's easier because then it's another source of protein. But I think this time of year you could do these wonderful hearty vegetable stews. And if you do it in like an edible, like a butternut squash or an acorn squash or a polenta bowl or something like that, and make it really special so they don't feel like they're suffering, you know.
That's right.
It's not fair.
Even though they are suffering.
But that's their choice, you know.
Well, so let's talk about side dishes. There are some green side dishes, and then there are some orange and white side dishes.
Yes, I am pushing for the resurgence of love of what we call the king of vegetables, Brussels sprouts. I think they're greatly underrated because all people ever did was boil them. Well, if you take Brussels sprouts...
Boiled any vegetable is not
really
that good.
Right, it does not, you know, showcase its beautiful qualities. If you take Brussels sprouts and you quarter them and you saute them with bacon and some pancetta and you finish with a little balsamic vinegar, it is the most delicious thing in the entire world. Brussels sprouts are also wonderful. They're wonderful with toasted pecans. I've had them with a little crumbled blue cheese on them. I think it's a great vegetable. I think, you know, you could do the green bean, onion, mushroom thing, you know, off the back of the can of the... People love that. It's traditional. We're doing green beans and sautéed. We're doing French green beans and shiitake mushrooms this year at our house because I think mushrooms are absolutely wonderful and delicious, and they go great with green beans.
And green beans are fine, and peas are fine, but guess what? They don't really taste all that good just steamed.
No. Green beans, we do green beans with a really nice reduced sherry cream sauce with some pearl onions that are very nice. To kind of eliminate any like nutritional value of them by the time you're done.
I'm coming
but, yeah,
to your house.
Make the vegetables sexy. If you're going to serve a green vegetable, it should be a sexy green vegetable.
And what about herbs that you, like, let's say peas. I mean, what herbs would you put on to make the peas taste better?
I find that peas go really well with fresh dill. I also find if you're going to use frozen peas, they barely need to be cooked.
Yeah.
You know, you want to serve
them
when
they get nasty really fast.
They go very fast. So if you're going to do something with sautéed onions or mushrooms, get all that sautéed. Get it all done. And at the last minute, add your peas, and it keeps them nice and fresh and crisp.
Mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes.
I love them both.
Do you have to have both?
No, I don't serve both. As a matter of fact, one of the things I think it's nice that we're going to try this year is we're going to do pureed parsnip and apple instead of mashed potatoes, which is a bit lighter, and then we could do the sweet potato pudding and not feel like we have two potatoes. I mean, I think if you serve two potatoes, people will eat them.
That's so true.
But then they'll fall asleep on your floor and they'll never leave.
Well, they'll fall asleep anyway because of the tryptophan in the turkey.
I know, it's true. It's true. Another really nice alternative if you want that kind of feeling without the actual starch is butternut squash. We're doing roasted butternut squash with tangerine glaze this year.
That's a starch.
It is, yeah, but it's not as heavy as sweet potatoes, you know. And I think that works. And if you want to do a million starches, do it, but maybe just do small amounts.
Well, the sweet potatoes, I think, are wonderful. I mean, what I do is I have sweet potatoes and not mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
But with the sweet potatoes, you can make them in all sorts of ways that involve glazing and cinnamon.
Oh, yes.
And
in case you need to get more calories into your meal, you could add brown sugar, maple syrup. We have this wonderful product called Steen's Cane Syrup that we get from New Orleans, which is a sugar cane syrup, an unprocessed sugar. It's so delicious. So there's, tons of stuff you can do. But, you know, the thing is that if you, like, only do one potato and not the other, then there's going to be someone at your table and go, but in my house, we always had sweet potatoes.
Well, that's if they're not very polite.
It's one of the, well, that's my friends. It's one of those things where you kind of think, like, well, maybe I need to do everything. But, you know, and I personally, too, though we don't do salad, I always do coleslaw.
You do coleslaw.
Not a mayonnaise-y, a vinaigrette coleslaw, because sometimes you just need something a little bit lighter. And I'm doing my, you know, it's nice, traditional, you could do a purple coleslaw, a green coleslaw, put some fennel into it. You know, it's a nice light addition to your meal, and it's great with sandwiches the next day.
And those things also, they really do help you digest your meal.
A little something to keep things moving, you
know? It does, it keeps them moving. Now, we've got about 4 minutes left to talk about dessert.
Oh, the best part. Desserts, you know.
Now, I think turkey's the best part, but one of my few culinary claims to fame is that I can make actually a very good apple pie. And the secret of the apple pie is when you cut up the apples, which you do first, you put them in a bowl full of rum and brandy.
That's great.
And then you drain
that.
Them and
I
you make
that.
Your apple pie the way you make it.
There
and
you go.
It is so good. And people say, wow, this is really... But and
that's
the
great.
Alcohol, I mean, it's even, you know, people who do not drink, which I don't really drink at all, the alcohol's gone by the time the pie is
sure, well,
baked.
It soaks up into the apples and it makes them really tender. Yeah, I mean, alcohol does a lot of great things in cooking. There's no question about it. I think apple pie, you can't beat a good apple pie. I'm a big fan of apple pie. And then, of course, I do the traditional, you know, pumpkin pie and pecan pie. A great thing we do with pecan pie is, you know how Everybody likes the pecans on the top, but not so much the gookie stuff underneath.
That's, you know, that's a good point.
If you take some melted chocolate and swirl it in before you bake it, it melds with the gookie stuff, and you have chocolate pecan pie. It's delicious.
That's so out of control.
It's delicious. Yes. And then also, you know, another thing, I mean, speaking of, because this is a huge heavy meal, so you want to, it's always nice to put out some kind of fruit if you can. It could be, you know, a bowl of strawberries. I know they're not in season right now, but, you know, some sort of berry or some sort of cooked fruit compote. I always like to supply some fruit at the end of the meal. Apples are delicious. You know, what if you just take some apples and just cut them up and sugar and cinnamon them and put them in a bowl?
And, you know, you do need that. You do need something fresh.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to add to your meal. It really is. You know, even though, of course, we serve all our desserts with buckets of whipped cream, you know, the illusion of sometimes, yeah, I just can't do it.
I think this is, for those people who like to eat healthy, they don't eat dairy, they don't eat meat, they don't eat all sorts of things. If your body can handle it, you know, it's a great, I mean, I eat a diet which is much more healthy than I really would like to, just because I have to, because otherwise I don't feel well. But this is the one day where you can make
exactly.
an exception, and you
exactly.
can, once a year, you can actually get away with it. And so you sleep, you have kind of a food hangover all the rest of the day and the next day. So what?
Right. No, I think everybody should allow themselves to enjoy Thanksgiving. And I think that it's a really nice, I mean, it reminds you of your youth. You know, maybe you're with family you don't see all the time. Maybe you're with new friends. But it's really, it is a kind of chance to be like, okay, it's Thanksgiving. I'm just going to have that piece of pie. Give me some whipped cream. Leave me alone.
Speaking of alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks, what do you drink on Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, we have a lot of guests, and everybody called me and said, what should I bring? Personally, with me, I only ever drink water with my food. But
really?
That's just me. I think a nice light wine is nice.
Red or white?
I like white, personally, like a Pinot Grigio or something, not because the meal is so heavy. I can't do a real heavy cocktail with this. Though I have a hot apple cider toddy that I did on my show the other night that I was thinking about supplying.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah. I thought, yeah, that could, it's apple cider, a little cranberry, a little bit of tequila. Warm the whole thing up.
Sort of southwestern toddy.
Yeah, it's like a southwestern toddy. I was like, oh, that sounds really good. I think sparkling apple cider. My New York came out there for a second.
Cider.
I think that's a really nice accompaniment to this meal, actually. And, you know, there's that Santa Fe apple cider. There's
that's
a
right.
That's really quite delicious. Martinelli's does one. So I think something like that is nice, especially with children, and you want to kind of do a toast, you know, to have the alcohol thing. I think you can't go wrong with that.
And sparkling water with just a little bit of any kind of juice in it, of course, is good with just about anything.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, and as we all know, it's so important for us all to keep drinking as much liquids as possible around here, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are just about out of time. Anything else you want to add about Thanksgiving dinner?
Try to enjoy yourself. I know a lot of people only cook turkey once a year and they get all tense. It's not that complicated. Do it ahead of time. Take your time. Have a cocktail while you're cooking. And invite a friend over to help you, maybe.
One quick question. You're cooking your turkey. The turkey's in the oven. While the turkey is cooking, I make the apple pies on the day of Thanksgiving. So can you put your apple pies in while this turkey is still cooking?
Absolutely. No, you can.
They're not going to taste
there's
like.
There's not a real transfer of flavors in an oven. People always think that, you know. But you're absolutely. If you have enough oven space, you're not going to be crowding your turkey. You could totally use another shelf at the same time.
And you can cook them high enough. You can cook them high on the rack if your turkey is.
Yeah, just keep your eye on it because different position in the oven does affect the browning.
Stacy Pearl is executive chef at Walter Burke Catering. She is the host and producer of Mouth of Wonder, which airs on KSFR on Saturday mornings at 10:30. And she is with us here at least once a year.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Have a wonderful holiday.
You too. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan features the winners of the Downbeat Magazine Reader's Poll. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. Have a wonderful, happy Thanksgiving, and we will see you on Friday. Hasta la vista. Ciao.